in most ghost stories is, or any sort of religious thing that's not, you know, a direct faith-based movie, as soon as we bring religion into something, there's an instant preconceived notion that there's a box that we must all fill into and it all has to be this exact same way. And I wanted to challenge it. So one way I knew to challenge it was, here's the box that you might be ready for, but we're going to throw all the rules out the window as we kind of get into it, because just as I believe faith is an individual choice, the movie had to show faith as an individual choice. And I couldn't say, here's a series of rules that you must comply with in order. Then I'm preaching at you. Nobody wants to be preached at.
Right.
I mean, some people do, but I don't want to preach at anybody. So
not at the movies, just, for goodness sake.
Right.
That is director Drew Hall talking about his film Convergence. When you mix religion with the supernatural or horror, it gives the film a much deeper meaning. Maybe such is the case in The Exorcist, for example. And in this case, he also said he threw out all the convention for these type of films. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics can help us explore our humanity. I spoke to Drew and one of his actors, Laura Coyote.
You know, what appeals to me about this movie right off the bat is I've always liked movies where there's kind of either a gateway or the lines between heaven and hell are a little blurry. And that's what grabbed me to this. For both of you, what kind of drew you to the subject matter?
One of the biggest things that drew me to the project was Drew. When the audition happened, I had, you know, I didn't have the full script yet. I just had my scenes that were, you know, just a couple scenes for the audition. And when I arrived, he had a manifesto, that's really the only way to put it, that we were all to read before we came in. And I've been doing this for decades.
Mm.
And have to say, that was my very first manifesto experience. And so I found it intriguing, both in its audacity and that it was happening at all.
Yeah.
And so when I read this manifesto, I took it very seriously because I had never seen anything like it. And as I was reading it, I realized that the movie was about so much more than the scenes that I had in my hand would indicate. It was an opportunity to sort of look into and delve into topics I find very fascinating.
Mm.
I'm very intrigued by all things unseen that we live with all day, every day. To get into some more spiritual aspects of life and, you know, what is the unseen part of our world was fascinating to me.
More on Convergence in just a moment.
Thank you, Laura. That's the my chest is puffed like a rooster. I feel like I'm running around now. For me, part of the reason why I provided those letters is because I'm manifesto, if you will. But for me, it was very much an internal journey that I think on a spiritual level, I have a core of faith that I choose to believe in a higher power, but I struggle with it. It's a challenge. I'm faced with, you know, tragedy and loss, and then questioning what did that mean? How did that lead me there? So I kind of wanted to play in that space a little bit and make a little bit more personal journey into that. And at the same time, I'm really obsessed, as Laura mentioned as well, I'm really obsessed with the unseen. And I kind of like this idea, whether you want to call it science fiction or you want to call it supernatural, I really love this idea of what is the other side. Because one thing that's really perplexing to me in most ghost stories is, or any sort of religious thing that's not, you know, a direct faith-based movie, as soon as we bring religion into something, there's an instant preconceived notion that there's a box that we must all fill into and it all has to be this exact same way. And I wanted to challenge it. So one way I knew to challenge it was, here's the box that you might be ready for, but we're going to throw all the rules out the window as we kind of get into it, because just as I believe faith is an individual choice, the movie had to show faith as an individual choice. And I couldn't say, here's a series of rules that you must comply with in order. Then I'm preaching at you. Nobody wants to be preached at.
Right.
I mean, some people do, but I don't want to preach at anybody. So
not at the movies, just, for goodness sake.
Right. We the Oscars do that for us. So sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. Laura, what's amazing about you is you have one of these faces that you can, it's timeless, because you can play women from the future, the past, the present, and totally pull it off. I mean, that's actually, I think, pretty rare. because you can't take, like, some women can't play women in the past very well. They just don't look it. But you have that ability to be able to do that, and that's...
Well, I think I've been blessed with a face what would you call it? I'm fairly regular. Insofar as, like, I would say Robin Wright Penn is another of these.
Yeah.
Sienna Miller. There's a few of us that honestly, it doesn't matter how many times you've seen our faces, and obviously you've seen theirs even more. It doesn't matter how many times you've seen our faces. You don't even forget recognizing us at the store. You don't even recognize us. Like, I one time had a movie running on TV that some friends were watching with me, and during the break for the movie, a commercial I was in ran, and people didn't recognize that the same person who's sitting next to them is the person in the movie and the person in the commercial. So, you know, I definitely have one of those faces that just sort of, it isn't significantly something or another. It's just one of those faces you can impose your own ideas on.
Mm. Can I interject real quick? Just one thought. I would actually define, and again, I know Laura, but I first met her through like a 10-second conversation when she comes in, and there's always this weird, at least for me, I'm always like totally intimidated by any actor that's willing to walk in and do a casting thing. But the moment I saw her, she struck me with one word, and I think it applies, which I would call you timeless. And it's also the mark of what I consider a timeless actress is also the mark of someone who I want to engage with and watch forever. It's timeless. Because you transcend the pop culture moment of now. You transcend the legacy moment. You kind of exist in the space that, well, and weirdly, you're in a movie called Convergence about that kind of stuff, but still you transcend those elements. So I would say timeless is the best word to describe that. That's what I would go with.
Well, wow, let's just talk about this all day. This feels great.
And actually, in the trailer, that the line that you have and what you're looking for, I'm looking for redemption. And he goes, well, I'm looking for revenge. Speak to that about kind of like both facets of two extremes, really, in this movie.
You know, for me, that moment was, it's kind of a scary moment for me because in the world, I feel often that the things that draw my attention and the things I care about and the things that matter most to me, that there are people who not only aren't interested in those same things, but actually want to tear them down.
Yeah.
So for me, that moment where you see that somebody is so not tracking with you that they're actually just on this destructive path, that they can't even see the joy you see. They can't even, you know, feel the happiness you feel. It's unavailable to them. It's inaccessible to them. And, you know, whether that's because of what they've been through or, you know, nurture or nature is beside the point. The point is there is sort of an us and them kind of world in that way of that there are creators and destroyers.
Yeah.
And I think anybody can be either of those things given any circumstance that might push them into that situation. But moment where one is facing the other and going, oh, and each of them is thinking, oh, you're so crazy, you should see it my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the other side for me is always that, the theme of redemption that appears in, you know, hundreds of movies, I mean, has become kind of muddled, in my opinion. What we define as redemption nowadays, and I'm not picking on anybody because I enjoy the movies too, but, like, if we take one of the films where, you know, insert a female character that has been killed, captured, or whatever, and the husband, father, boyfriend goes on a revenge streak, essentially.
Oh, yeah, I saw that movie.
Yeah.
But we call that, often we call that he's seeking redemption for their death, but in reality, that's not redemption. He's actually seeking revenge. So we've kind of blurred the line between what is redemption and what is revenge. And one of the things that I wanted to explore, and Laura obviously hit on it very well, is that to me, revenge is the other side of redemption. So if you have redemption staring in the face, you turn, and that's why the shot was even framed the way it was, is to kind of like, he has his back towards redemption. She offers redemption. He has his back towards it because he's facing revenge. It's just kind of drawing, that's way too film school, but can't help it. It's just drawing that line down the center to say the other side of that is revenge. Because if you choose not to forgive and redeem and find redemption in that, your only other choice really is to go the other direction. Because it is a black and white issue to me, at least.
Besides Laura, what a great cast. I mean, McKelty, I've always loved his work. And Ethan, my God. he just explodes in every scene he's in, maybe literally, but Yeah, talk about working with these folks and Drew directing these folks.
Well, for me, I actually didn't have any scenes with Ethan. All my scenes were, you know, his path and mine never actually crossed. Though, after work, he and I hung out a bunch, and I found him to be an incredibly interesting person. So I was thrilled to work in the same film with him because I've been watching him, you know, my entire adult life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't actually get to do any scenes with Ethan, so we'll have to correct that sometime in the future.
There you go.
Yeah, look, I walked in intimidated as all get out because the entire cast in the hospital, we'll just keep it without spoiling anything, that chunk of cast, all of them had extremely awesome, all of them had extremely amazing screen presence, and they all brought something. Each person was handpicked to bring something by their own audition because it was, I let them take the character. I gave them a guideline, but every single person in the picture brought the character their own world, which is how I believe it should be done. An actor shouldn't just recite words. They should live that character. And that's clearly what, our cast did. And it started with, you know, getting in with Clayne and getting in with Ethan and finding those two guys.
Amazing.
Clayne's insane, and now he's Riggs on Lethal Weapon. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. It was nuts. But, so, you know, Clayne comes in with a certain style, and I was really interested in him because of his Southern upbringing. The character he's playing is based on I named the character after a friend of mine that was basically like the catalyst for me even writing Convergence. A friend of mine died of cancer named Ben Wall.
Mm.
And I needed to make sure that if I was going to do any sort of service to my buddy Ben, I couldn't have a character of the South be portrayed. I didn't need Ernest Goes to Purgatory.
Right.
That's not
right.
What we were after. And so Clayne brought that in. Then Ethan came in and kind of subdued his character because he very interestingly, the way the script is written, and Mark could probably attest, you could have taken the characters, you could take them, if you took them really big, they're going to come across as preachy, and this is probably every character in the film, but if you play them more natural, where they found it to be grounded for them, the actors found it to be grounded. That's the performance you got. That's the joy of it. They all just kind of, they found the characters with a little bit of guidance from me just writing the script, but they found the characters and they all sort of elevated my, they made me look good is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you know, I've had people say things like, you know, do you act differently when the tone of the movie is different? And I would be lying if I said the tone of the movie doesn't affect your performance at all. However, you have to keep in mind that the character doesn't actually know they're in a movie.
Right.
So whether you're in Ernest Goes to Purgatory or whether you're in Convergence, your character doesn't know whether you're a comic relief or whether, you know what I mean? So you're playing it as an actor. You're coming to it with a reality, no matter how fantastical the subject matter is or the script is.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
No, good point. Very good point.
Let's take a break and then return with more talk of Convergence and haunted hospitals.
The hospital, it's almost like a character in itself, isn't it? And kind of talk about finding this place and also what was it like to work in this place?
Well, I'll let you talk about being in it, but I'll jump into it. So I always saw the hospital when I wrote it, I knew this place was closed, and I saw it. I didn't know it was in the condition it was in. So that hospital had been closed for 6 months, but the people managing it kept it open, and not just open. They kept it up to medical, for the most part, they kept it up to medical standard in case they ever wanted to bring it back to life. So resuscitate it. Ha ha. So the floors were waxed constantly. There was a janitorial staff keeping the place looking immaculate. So instantly that was very easy. And so when we started writing it or started blocking it and going through it after I'd written it, we started finding ways of making it disorienting because every hospital I've ever been in my entire life is the most turnaround thing in the world. And I started finding a parallel with that. And I'm going to screw up the name I just don't remember it. What's the hotel in The Shining? Because that's what I started to parallel it after.
Mm.
Because in The Shining, you know, the geography is impossible. They make turns that double back on themselves and loop around. And it's the same sort of thing that we put into play when we designed overhead maps. We might be shooting on the second floor in one place that has no corners because it's a sort of an octagonal shape. And then suddenly they walk through one door and it's a straight hallway. Well, if you drew it out, it's the most confusing mess in the world. And it was meant to be that way because that's part of the narrative. So once we got into it, I think we lived there was like 20-something days we were there.
Wow.
You were probably there, Laura, is that correct?
I was there. I know I've missed like basically a month of my life. So, yeah, because that was a busy time for me too, and I was going back and forth a bunch.
And so, yeah, I mean, we lived in this weird, our offices were in the hospital, everything was in the hospital, so we spent more time in that hospital than anybody had been in there in a long time, and it was disorienting and confusing, and you walked the same hallway 50 times a day. It was...
Well, for me, I will tell you, coming from the outside and not having, you know, location scouted and having no sense of the layout of the building and all that, you know, when you arrive as an actor, you arrive at a door and then people take you or signs with arrows point you to where you need to be. For me, the first few days I shot, I thought we were in an abandoned facility because I would come in this back door where the light in that area didn't seem to operate. So we'd go through these darkened tunnels to arrive in the back of the building, and then we'd go follow these arrows around or follow a human around and get to these elevators, and then you would get to a place where there were other people working, but they were all our people, and it was all, you know, this false world. But then one day when we were going to eat, we went down to a cafeteria, and there was like a staff in hospital clothing. And it was actually, I mean, I wouldn't want to spoil anything about the movie, but it was actually a lot like the movie where I was just like, whoa, what world is this? It's in the same building at the same time, and I didn't even know it was here. And they're all like operating like that's totally normal to be in this building that we're experiencing is very spooky and dark and haunted and creepy, and they're like in their scrubs. Walking around, you know.
There's one active office in the building, and I believe that films can be very, I hate to use the word damaging, but a motion picture industry can be very consuming of an environment. And because we were there with another active office, we would invite them to lunch every day. So yeah, those were actual hospital. They had one little office left open that was like a private clinic. And we just invited, like, anytime you guys want to come eat, we eat, you know, weird hours, every 6, you know, depending on call time. Sometimes it'll be noon, sometimes it'll be 3 in the afternoon. We have no idea.
Yeah. But I never ran into what I would call the living people. I never ran into them anywhere else. You know, it was just in that dining area that you would every once in a while see, like, this building that was fully in having its normal day. You know, like, they were just doing life. That's what I called them, the living people. They were just doing life. And we were the weird thing. And the first time I saw them, I was like, what are you doing here? They felt weird to me because I had settled into this spooky environment with this, you know, what I thought, deserted building. So for me, it was a wake-up. I kind of think it's perfect for the movie.
Talk about an incentive to stay in character, too.
Right? Makes it easy.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, I love these type of movies, and I don't know why, but I always like the Seventh Seal, the great Ingmar Bergman film, where it's very allegorical, where a knight is playing chess with death. Is this... For both of you, do you feel this film is more allegorical, or is it more along the lines of maybe a spiritual kind of journey?
Yes, it for me, and I can only speak to, I have two different scopes, right? I have the intent, and then I have the personal. And so for me, the intent was to make, I think independent film should celebrate being different. I think it shouldn't be a genre. It should be embracing ideas that aren't necessarily the norm. And so much in independent thriller or horror, whatever brand we have to put on the movie, you know, the trend right now is to basically just replicate itself over and over again.
Right.
So I try to make something different. So yes, it's kind of allegorical, but at the same time, it wasn't like a hard intent to push on the audience. Individually, yes, it was very much allegorical. It's exactly the way I struggle with my own personal faith. The challenges. You know, I don't say it's an error, but I certainly put myself up, as I can only speak to me, but I certainly put myself up a little more than I would have liked. That's my daughter, that's the baby in the film. I'm projecting from the loss of one of my friends who happens to be named the same character. The various characters throughout the film are all named with biblical names that link to certain people in my past. I pulled it all in, so for me it is extremely... my journey of struggling with faith. It's literally my journey, but it wasn't meant to be like to me, it was never meant to be preachy. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and I think as an actor, you can't approach a role as an allegory. You know, a person isn't an allegory. I mean, they might be in your world, but they don't know that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't break down a scene based on your position as an allegory. So it has to become personal for you. And I think what Drew did very well was chose actors for whom this was personal, even though none of us shared the same personal experiences that he has had. We all connected to the material on a personal level and brought that. So, you know, I think as an actor, you approach it as you would any other role. And then as a film goer, as a writer, then you can examine it in, you know, afterward as an allegory. So I think that's more of an intellectual sport to be done after the movie's already made for me as an actor.
No, I hear you there. You know, I think probably for the last 5 years or so, I really noticed it. And I have Tribeca Film Festival that I'm covering coming up. And the films I'm enjoying the most are in the independent vein. Unfortunately, Hollywood, most of the films made are business deals, and they look like them. They're sequels, or they cast people, and they just kind of group people together so you go see it, and then the plot is horrible. But independent-wise, it seems to be a very vibrant and thriving market because maybe because the big bucks aren't involved, and the story is the thing that literally survives. If you both comment on that.
Well, I will tell you that as somebody who's been in a bunch of big budget movies, that one of the cautions you have to have when you make a big budget movie is to not do all your problem solving by throwing money at it.
Right.
Because one of the things that makes so much magic in the history of movies is accident, surprise, mistake, you know, and obstacles. Obstacles that have to be overcome in the moment on set can be some of the favorite moments of all time in history of film.
Yeah.
And if you solve every problem by throwing money at it, you miss out on the opportunity to find the film that wanted to make itself through ingenuity and just coming up with things on the fly, whether you're an actor improvising or whether, you know, to get past something,
yeah,
or whether you're the cast, the crew, trying to make something work when it doesn't want to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I run a fine line because I like popcorn movies or blockbusters. I'm a Star Wars nerd. Like I can't feed my Star Wars addiction without having a studio backing it. And there has been a lot of innovation that happens on the studio side that often is overlooked in the sense of technical stuff that does benefit independents going down the road. So if we don't have the big studios who have the money to throw, not the problem side, but I mean, literally to create a new workflow pattern or to encourage a new, let's talk about moving away from film. Film is a great example. So I'd love to shoot everything I could on film, but I don't have the finances for it. And now that most studios aren't even shooting on film anymore because it's still so expensive. They helped market that digital revolution. They helped push that going forward. However, the catch of that is, I think we should probably give a little more leeway, and I wish people had a little broader appreciation for independent filmmaking. And I don't just mean giving them a pass because it's a quote low budget movie. I hate that term because it suddenly it's got a stigma to it. Mm. If we say it's an independent film and this is someone who took, it doesn't just mean that financially I'm independent. It also means that narratively I'm independent.
Right.
I'm operating outside of the studio system completely. You know, the notes I get are from my actors. They're not from producers. That's the joy it should have.
And you chose the actors you wanted, not the ones that the studio approved.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no pre-sale tied to an independent film necessarily saying, well, you need this person to get this much money to sell in China or Europe or wherever.
Well, it's certainly a part of it, but it's not the head of the snake in the way that it is with studio film.
Absolutely. And so, but I think the both sides of it are really important. You can't have one without the other.
Mm.
You need both of those because if we don't have, I have aspirations. I want to make a $50 million movie. I want to make a big science fiction film. But the only way I know to do that is to continue making the best films with ideas that are innovative and say, look, I can do something as crazy as Convergence. I'm not shamelessly plugging myself. I'm just beating up on my own picture, but I did something as crazy as Convergence. Can you maybe consider me to do something crazy as Star Wars Episode 9?
Maybe.
Hey, why not? You guys say it so well, you know, what the situation is like. Now, for Convergence, I know it's available on Amazon Prime. Are there any other outlets where we can get this movie?
So it's on Blu-ray and DVD. You can the Blu-ray has some deleted scenes and a couple other special features, I think, on it. And then you can also catch it on iTunes, Vudu, pretty much anywhere there's VOD or any of that kind of stuff. It's available. And then it's in Best Buy stores. You can pick up a copy in Best Buy. And then in a couple of weeks, hopefully, I'm going to release. For some reason, the distributor did not put the commentary onto the Blu-ray. And it's a shame because I'm collecting commentaries. Like, eventually I'll get Laura to do commentary with her sequences. And what I wanted to do is actually I'm going to release them online for free at Convergy.com. Yeah, and so what I've done is instead of it just being a commentary, it's kind of like a riff track or Mystery Science Theater kind of thing. But you sync it up and you hit play. But instead of it just being base level, just people talking and you're watching the movie, I actually have a little countdown. So it's a video itself. There's a little countdown in the corner. And we'll actually show you, I sunk it up by hand, I'll show you behind the scenes footage of us preparing to do the very scene that we're showing you on the screen. So you actually get to watch versions as we're discussing it at the same time. It's a completely different way of experiencing the movie. And so, and it'll be free, so you can watch that for free and spoil it, but you won't really
I saw the little Vine thing you did of you, quote-unquote, over-directing me.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then cut to the scene that we were discussing. I thought that was really cool, to be able to see the juxtaposition of the direction versus the actual scene we were talking about.
So, yeah, imagine that with the commentary. That's what we're going to have. So, I'm going to add layers. So there's one with me in VFX, there's one with me in Klain, there'll be one with you and me, there'll be one with the director or the cinematographer, and we'll just kind of go down. So if you have a focus, if you're interested in acting, boom, here's an acting one. If you're interested in directing or VFX, here's a VFX one. There'll be a cinematographer, like I said, so forth.
That sounds great. I love stuff like that. I love stuff like that. For both of you, what's up next?
I'm a very busy person. I just realized
not
that
a
I
bad
have
thing.
No idea how many things I have pending. Let me just check. This is a wonderful problem to have.
Okay, it is.
I right now have a 10-episode series that's free through iTunes called Light of September that I did with an entirely British cast.
Oh, how good.
And they had me do my recordings in New Orleans, and it's a sci-fi, it's a cool project. I really like it, and it's with Tamsin Grieg and Tuppence Middleton and a bunch of other really cool British actors who did, you know, Lord of the Rings and Vikings and all that kind of thing.
Oh, nice.
So that's coming out. I have a couple of movies with, actually I have three movies with John Schneider.
Oh, yeah.
One called Hate Crime, where it's directed by Stephen Estep, and John Schneider and I play the parents of, I don't know how much to tell about that one. It's a dark story, and it's a story about how shame can really mess life up.
Mm.
And it's a gay theme. Our son is gay in the movie. So that I'm very excited about. He and I also did two other movies where he directed me. One is called Like Sun, and then the other is, they just renamed it, Inadmissible.
Oh, okay.
I'm also going to be in Camera Store, which is Scott Marshall Smith, the same guy who did When the Game Stands Tall. He wrote that.
Oh.
And this is with John Larroquette and John Rhys Davies. Yeah, I'm very excited about that movie because it's the first time I've done a scene where, like, as soon as we finished the day, I was like, I think I just did an actual, honest-to-God tearjerker scene. Like, I don't know how you get through that scene without crying for me. So that scene, I only did one scene in that movie, but I feel really good about it.
That's great.
And then I did another movie called Summertime, which I play Scott Bakula's wife.
Oh, nice.
This is another thing where we're playing parents of a gay son. And this is the same director who did, he did The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith.
Oh, yes.
And 7 Pounds as well.
Oh, yeah.
So
Yeah,
so I'm excited about that as well. And, oh, Lordy, I know I'm leaving things out. I know I am. And then I just booked a job. I start next week. But, you know, we generally don't speak about things we haven't shot yet.
Yeah.
And then I have a number of books I've written, and I have another book coming out in about a month that is my very first in a series of mystery books.
Oh, nice.
That Quentin Tarantino told me years ago I needed to write, and I finally figured out what it was I wanted to do with it, with the mystery genre. And so The Secret of the Other Mother, a Charlotte Reed mystery, will be coming out in about a month, and I'll be doing my first book signing at Jazz Fest.
Oh, great. My wife loves mysteries, so she'll download that for sure.
You know, it's funny because so much of what I do on film is very dark, and I didn't want to write anything terribly dark.
Yeah.
I didn't want to write anything with a lot of blood and guts. And so I think that was one thing that held me up for the longest time, is I kept thinking, I don't know how to write about detectives. I don't know how. But eventually I remember just Quentin didn't say to write detectives. He said, write something where people get to see how you figure things out. He thinks that the way I figure things out is, fascinating.
Oh, cool. Well, so, there you
like
go.
The wisp. That's what I did. It's your wisp thing. It's that. I understand him. I know what he's talking about. I've had conversations with him.
Yeah.
Well, very cool.
Yeah.
There's an endorsement. There you go. I haven't even read the book yet.
Shameless plug.
There you go. And Drew, what's on your table coming up?
I got a couple of things. I have, a comedy that we shot coming out sometime this year called Nigel and Oscar versus the Sasquatch. It's a really funny movie. It's got a really good cast, and it's a lot of SNL guys, Tim Meadows, and a gentleman from a show called The Middle, Neil Flynn, who plays the dad on The Middle. He was a janitor in Scrubs, is the other place people know him. And then Paul Britton, who was on SNL, and my dear friend Adam Hirschman, who was in Accepted. So you have these two brothers that kind of go looking for Sasquatch. It's a comedy. It's not a family, it is a family film in the sense that it's family friendly. So it's a nice, it's kind of like Napoleon Dynamite in the vibe that it has very clever comedy. It's all actor driven comedy. There's no language or other bits, but it's quite funny, very quirky little movie. And then juxtaposing against that, I've been working on a huge science fiction world called Ether. So we shot a proof of concept. So it's kind of it's epic sci-fi, but it has a little bit of steampunk influence. It's not set in traditional steampunk worlds.
Wow.
You can actually watch the trailer and the proof of concept at etherprologue.com. That's AETHERPROLOGUE. I think I spelled it right. Ether Prologue. AETHER is the important part. And you can kind of check that out. We got really lucky. The cinematographer has a bunch of Oscars from Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
the production designer was the art director from Blade Runner.
So,
like, for me, being a sci-fi nerd, I lost it. It's complete.
This was inevitable. I did find another huge one that I should have mentioned. So, Griff Hurst directed me in a movie with Christopher Lloyd and Robbie Kay and Frank Whaley and Candy Clark Rachel Brooke Smith, and it's called Cold Moon, and it's based on a best-selling book, Cold Moon Over Babylon. Oh, wait, there was one more. Dang it.
But wait, there's more.
I'm telling you, this is like, shoot. Well, talk amongst yourselves. I'm sure it'll come to me.
Well, that's great. Well, I mean, I'm definitely interested in your future projects. Laura, that sci-fi series sounds interesting, And Drew, man, the Sasquatch comedy and the sci-fi film, man, that's going to be, those are on my radar, I'll tell you that.
I am part of your audience, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sci-fi talk is in my wheelhouse. That is my world. I like to subtly work in, there's a couple in Convergence that I won't point them out, but there's two or three Firefly references, three or four other science fiction references, and I like to put them in. Because if a fan picked up on that, they know that I'm not just pandering. I'm legitimately a brown coat. I'm legitimately a sci-fi nerd. So,
okay, I just remembered it.
There it is.
For the Sci-Fi Channel. How could I forget?
Oh, yeah.
I've just done my second of the Sci-Fi Channel shark movies.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, last year I did Zombie Shark, and this year I will be in Ozark Shark.
Oh, I love it. Love those shark movies, I do.
Those are so much fun.
Oh, my God, yes.
They are. They really are. We shot out at John Schneider Studios, which is currently flooded, sadly. But we had a wonderful time out there. It was a really great shoot.
That sounds great. What a pleasure to talk to both of you. This sounds really cool. And, I love independent film. It's really, to me, what's happening these days. And, Hollywood should kind of wake up and look, because this is where it's happening. And it's really cool. I'm really looking. I have Amazon Prime and haven't seen it yet, but I think Convergence is in my wheelhouse, coming up real soon.
Definitely. Fantastic.
Thank you again, both.
Convergence is available on Prime Video. You can also see it on Freevert on Freevee with ads. You can also see it on Freevee with ads. And on Google Play and Vudu for rent or buy. Just want to remind you about Sci-Fi Talk Plus. Click on the link in the show notes for a free lifetime subscription. Yes, it's free, no obligation. Thanks so much for listening. This is Tony Tolotto.